to jsou jen vojáci, přijeli v hranatých železných maringotkách.
A recent four-day conference devoted to the theme of Samizdat and Tamizdat networks in Central Europe brought together scholars, journalists, and members of the former democratic opposition who participated in Samizdat networks in the 1970s and 1980s. One of the key questions explored concerned how we look at this history today. In this week's Talking Point, we take a look at one specific element of the legacy of Central European Samizdat, namely, how it may be transplanted to other regions of the world today.
Tak vás tu máme, bratři, z krve Kainovi, po slové noci, která dozad podá dýku, tak vás tu máme, bratři, v noci Stalinovi, však ne tak jako včera, dnes už bez šeříků, však díky za železné holuby.
For me, Samizdat was very important that I think that it was the possibility to express the opinion of the people in the time of the censorship.
Okay, but what was it? How did it work? What types of materials constituted Samizdat?
It began with the information we multiply, but it was done at the normal type machine. And we multiplied the information which we had received from somebody, or sometimes when we received the foreign journals, we have done the summary of it and we have given it to the other friends. I think that it was really the basis of the Samizdat.
Jiřina Šiklová was one of the Czechoslovak Democratic Opposition's key activists during the 1970s and 1980s. Not only did she write texts for underground Samizdat circulation, but above all, Jiřina Šiklová was the point person for Samizdat smuggling operations in and out of communist Czechoslovakia. Thousands of texts forbidden by the communist censors got out of the country via the networks established by Czechs in exile, with which Šiklová collaborated. Willem Prečan in Germany and Jan Kavan in England ran the Samizdat information highways closest to Jiřina Šiklová. Similar networks operated in and out of neighboring Poland, though on a much larger scale. Barbara Falk, the chair of the Department of Security and International Affairs at Canadian Forces College in Toronto, Ontario, and the author of The Dilemmas of Dissidents in East Central Europe, has a refreshing perspective on one possible legacy of the Central European Samizdat experience.
Basically, the paper I wrote looks at the lessons and legacies of dissent, of Samizdat, Tamizdat, the organizational efforts of the sort of unofficial civil society organizations in Central Europe in the 70s, 80s, and look to see whether or not that model fits in other parts of the world, and in particularly, I'm looking at the Middle East. The country that I find most interesting at the moment is Iran, and I rather ironically subtitled my paper, Why Iran Could Be the Next Poland, because Iran is in a very interesting place right now. First of all, it has a very, very large young population. It has a population that is well-educated. It has a high degree of internet access and usage, a very, very active blogosphere. Farsi is now the third most important blogging language in the world. And Iranian oppositional politics are at a place that I think is very similar to where Polish oppositional politics was in the early 1970s, where they were disillusioned with reform from above. They had rejected the sort of romantic insurrectionary moment of 19th century Polish opposition. And they looked to a very pragmatic, non-ideological, piecemeal approach. This is the approach that Adam Michnik famously called New Evolutionism. And I think this is exactly the same stance that the Iranians are taking now. They've had their theocratic revolution, and which was, you know, a very popular revolution. There was some violence involved. They had the overthrow of an authoritarian government of the Shah in 1979. They also have, within the living experience of many, that authoritarian experience. And in a sense, what Iranians are looking for now is a rejection of both.
Okay, now about the technicality of the so-called unofficial sphere, some of the older activists and dissidents had some objections to you drawing a modern-day technological parallel to classic Samizdat and the use of the internet today. First of all, can you explain for our listeners what you were getting at in terms of modern-day communication and why you think it's viable to call that communication samizdat?
At the beginning of my presentation, I held up a book which was an anthology of Farsi blog entries, and I said, this is the samizdat of the 21st century. And I think it is. I don't think there will ever be samizdat ever again in terms of the small booklets or entire books or pamphlets or newspapers written on onion skin paper with carbon on old ancient rickety typewriters. I mean, for one thing, that technology doesn't exist anymore. I don't even think you'll get the kind of innovative Ramka silkscreen type independent movable printing presses that were developed in Poland. I think what you're going to get now is either virtual communication, either through the blogosphere, through chat rooms, through both intergroup and intragroup communication on the internet, or to permeate and penetrate the digital divide, you're going to get stuff that's produced and self-published on the internet and then used after it's been printed or distributed widely in print form, and that's going to be the point of distribution. But I just don't see how in the 21st century you're ever going to go back to the old world of samizdat. And why would you? I mean, the possibilities for instant communication, for a dramatic reaction to the events of the day, the possibility for information flow from outside of the country, from the immigrant and exile communities, from tamizdat back into the country. And tamizdat, in a sense, exists because there are all these external human rights and monitoring watch sites. Where I live in Toronto, there's a very excellent one, which is called Iran Watch Canada. There's a worldwide, you know, internet chat room which links Iranian exiles together, happens every Saturday. I mean, this is the nature of the communication of opposition in the 21st century. And I think it's going to get more inventive, but it's going to be very much built in and around and through broadband technology.
Barbara Falk's thesis generated much discussion at the From Samizdat to Tamizdat meeting in Vienna. One of the main divisions came along generational lines. Several of the former democratic oppositionists from Central Europe found it difficult to think about 21st century samizdat relying heavily on internet communications. Yudina Shiklova belongs to this camp.
Maybe that I am old, but I think that information is not all what it is important for the citizens' movement or for the samizdat. I think that the personal contact which you have, the trust that you could give this material to somebody, you can look to his or her ace and you can speak with him. I think that it is very important. It is not only the information. I can have plenty of information, but the information, it is not the friendship, not the movement, and not the solidarity.
For the older generation of Central European activists, personal ties were the key to making the conspiracy operations work. Everything was built on trust. Thus, for these former activists, the experience of the 1970s and 1980s in the communist bloc cannot be easily applied to the world of 21st century cyberspace.